that segues well into what we're going to talk about this morning, because we're going to be talking about community. So I am going to invite up the two couples that I lovingly call the Hilsons, the Hensons and the Hillmans, because they are like one. Yeah, welcome them up. Yay! All right, and I'm going to have them introduce themselves. Why don't you kick us off?
Elvin. Hey, everybody. I'm Elvin.
Hey. Casey.
I'm Megan.
Hey. And I'm Jorma.
So, Elvin and Casey Hillman, and then Megan and Jorma Henson, and yes, Elvin, like an Elvin Knight or Lord of the Rings, right?
Yeah. E-L-V-E-N, yeah. Not Ian. Don't get
not Alvin. No chipmunks here. And so, because this is easily, for me, one of the most interesting things, I have not had two friends that are so very close to each other with a more interesting set of names than Elvin and Jorma. It's like a high, exciting thing. Thank you. So Elvin and Jorma, why don't you tell us, how did you guys meet, become friends?
Well, we met, I guess, the junior high school time frame. I think you were a freshman. I was in junior high still. We just introduced by a mutual friend, and we really became friends, though, right after high school, for both of us. I had a rough family life, and he was my friend who lived literally right down the street and spent a lot of time with him, a lot of nights. Just hanging out, driving through the city.
Nothing crazy, guys. Don't get your mind
not
somewhere
too
else.
Crazy.
I mean, zingers and chocolate milk and listening to terrible music, like terrible Christian rap from forever ago. It was real bad. It was hardcore. We would have fun in a Mazda 323.
Some of you are shocked right now. They're like, there's such a thing as terrible Christian rap? I had no idea.
T-Bone, look him up.
T-Bone. Oh, I grew up in the church. That tickles me to no end. T-Bone. Oh, gosh. That's good. And so Elvin and Jorma were good friends from early on, and then they met their significant others following that. And you guys were introduced. You kind of met, you know, like you do when you have friends. Like, these two people are friends, and then they have significant others. But you guys were showing earlier, there was a moment where you knew, like, we're more than just friends. Like, did we just become best friends? So talk about that moment.
I'll let Casey tell you. Casey tells the story much better than I do.
I like telling stories. Okay, so Elvin and Jorma were hanging out fairly often, and Megan and I decided that we were going to hang out one night when they went out. And Megan and I were sitting in my living room, and the neighbor boy, who happened to be a teenager, comes over knocking on the door asking for my husband, and I was like, is there anything I can help you with? He's not here. And he said, there's a raccoon in the street, and we need it moved. It's dead. And Megan was like, and why do you need help with this? And so Megan walks outside, and she kicks the raccoon very hard, and to make sure it was dead. And the teenage boy said, it's dead. And she said, have you ever seen a raccoon attack? So then she asks me for a glove. So I go in and get a gardening glove. And she picks it up and puts it over our, over our fence, because it was just like blackberry bushes behind our yard. And that was a moment I knew that I loved her.
That is like hardcore. Only best friends could have that story, right? Like, you don't have an acquaintance story like that. That's like a defining line. That's either now an enemy or a best friend. So I'm glad it turned well for you guys. So where this is heading is like they're friends, but there was this moment where they decided to move in together into the same house. And so talk about that. Talk about the moment when you guys moved in the first time.
So it was about, I feel like, 6 years ago. Casey and I were living in West Lynn, and Jorma and Megan were living just down the street from here. We had mold in our duplex that we were renting at the time, and we needed to find a place to live quickly because we were taking a a trip altogether to Mexico to go hang out, and we wanted to move before we flew down to Mexico. We decided temporarily that we would just hang out in their basement for like a couple weeks or something. And after we had done that and we went to Mexico and really solidified the bond that we had, grew so much closer and learned so much more about each other that we thought we couldn't learn, right? Like, we thought that that stage of our friendship was over. We decided to give it a run and see how long, well, with no end date, we just said, let's try to live together and make our families work together and share our lives together. Any additions there, guys?
No, nailed it. And so that was the first, and then later you guys moved out after a while, because that was like a year or a year and a half?
18 months, yeah.
18 months. So a year and a half, they did that. And then you guys moved out into an apartment, and then you guys had a conversation where... and I was there when it happened, so it's still kind of funny. Where Jorma, let's see if I'm getting this right, you text Elvin a home and like, hey, this place looks big enough where we could all live together again. Ha ha ha. No, wait, maybe we should do this again. Like intentionally. So Jorma, talk about that.
Yeah, so one of the reasons why they moved out is because our house is pretty small. It was 1,200 square foot, really just a, it was a two bedroom, one bath house. Well, we've changed it now. But so it was really small. We had an unfinished, partially unfinished basement, which they were in with all their kids, and it was cramped. So anyway, I was just, for some reason, pulled up my phone, started looking online at houses, and I found one like, hey, this is like five bedroom, you know, it's 2,500 square feet. This would do well. Just texted over to Elvin. No idea why I did it. So I'm more of a private person who likes my space. But I text that over to him and said, hey, we could all live together in this house. And then you text back.
Yeah, I think I had a weird smile on my face in case he said, well, what's going on? And I said, Jorma just sent me a house that we could all live in. And she was like, what? What? And we kind of tossed around the idea. And ultimately, I think we decided to give it a try. Well, lots of conversation and planning.
We decided in the summer.
There was a lot of prayer involved and just trying to figure out, so why do we want to do this? You know, what is our motivation? And ultimately decided that, yeah, we want to move in together.
And if you didn't hear, so several months over the summer talking about this and looking at this, and how long now has it been since you guys made that decision till now?
10 months.
10 months. And so if you've ever been to the Hilson compound, so they have, Casey and Elvin have three kids. You guys have Hank. So they have, there's Braden. Braden's right there. So you have eight people living in one house, and it's not a financial decision. It's not like they could both be living other places. This was an intentional community decision. Like, what does it look like? And this is one of the things that you'll quickly learn if you hang out with the Hensons and Hillmans, which they, when we were talking about this before, they said, and I loved, each and every one of them lives with their spouse and their best friend. Like, that's why they came together, their spouse and their best friend. And so we want to use their seemingly unique story. I don't know if there's any others of you that, like, have intentionally picked friends to come live with you in your house. Because I think that their story helps us understand community better than others. And here in North America, we have this way of living where this is strange. Like, by and large, this is kind of a weird arrangement where usually if you move in with someone, like, it's because you have to. You don't choose into this. And so I think there's some lessons. There's some things that we can pick up about their story, because community is a bit of a buzzword. Right? Like, come join a community. Come live in community. Like, I love doing life with you. If you've been around a church, churches use this kind of weird language a lot. And there's a certain thing about community and being with other people that's really like, yeah, I want that. Of course I want that. But usually when you step into it, you don't always count all the costs on what true community looks like. And so we're going to talk about that a little bit. So the first thing is I ask you guys to kind of go through and share, what is your favorite part about living with your spouse and your best friend?
Well, I think that kind of sums it up, really. It's great always having somebody to talk to and hang out with, whether, like, Jorma and I are huge Timbers fans. We have a lot of similar interests that, you know, I don't share necessarily with Casey, but there's always somebody in the house to watch sports with, to have a beer with, to hang out with, right? Like, that's always there for me. The support is incredible.
Me being the practical person that I am,
I'm counting on you to say it.
Having another mom in the house, like, there are mothers out there. I always have somebody that can, and it loves to watch my kids while I go to the store. If I have a doctor's appointment, I'm a full-time student. Elvin is a full-time student. There are some days where, like, I have a sick child. I'm like, well, I could skip class, or I could just, like, wipe their nose and send them to school and hope for the best. But, like, Megan is always like, oh, just leave them here. Like, oh, it's fine. Just leave them here. She cooks half the nights of the week, so we split our cooking routines, which is amazing. That is my favorite part of the community, is not having to cook every single night, having another mom. Because it's not like I'm sending them to the babysitter's house. I don't have to, like, bring them to childcare. Not that there's anything wrong with, like, daycare, but, like, my faith aligns with her faith. Like, she has the same rules. She knows my beliefs, my wishes, and the way that I treat and raise my kids. So it's not being with a babysitter. It's like, oh, my other mom. Cause, and my kids will say that too. So my other mom, and they're like, you're who? Like, so, favorite part.
My favorite part, that's loud. Is that too loud?
No.
Oh. It's just my voice. My favorite part is having the support to go through the hard things. And we've had our share of hard stuff, both before we moved in together and as we're living together. And knowing that regardless of which one of the people, other adults, is home, knowing that you have a partner or someone that you can go to that has your back is a really powerful thing. Always knowing that someone has your back.
Yeah, for me, besides living with my wife and my best friend and having someone to just do life together with, I get to understand different personalities. So I'm not the type of person that really likes to do that. So this kind of forces me into that and makes me a better person. It affects everything in my life for my job, for one. It makes me a better manager, a better supervisor, a better peer. But just understanding different perspectives from different personality types that are oftentimes very different from mine.
Yeah, because it's one thing to entertain someone else's viewpoint. It's another thing to live with that viewpoint. And it actually puts a bit of a pressure to understand people in a different way, in a deeper way. And so let's use that to kind of, well, that's the flip side of the coin, right? Like, if it was all amazing and wonderful and beautiful, you would all just be clearly missing out, right? But there might be some difficulties in living all together. So why don't you guys share some of those?
I would like to first say that you guys are all missing out, because this is amazing. So I think the most challenging thing for me is not being in control. Like, not that this works for everybody, but, like, gender roles in our relationship are kind of my favorite. Like, I love that he goes to work, and, like, I do the cooking and the cleaning, and I like the way I do my cooking and my cleaning. Like, there are specific ways that I like the dishwasher loaded and the towels folded, and, like, there's just specific ways that I like things done.
Casey would like if you people could all scoot over 3 inches. That would be super awesome. Yeah.
So that's not a priority for everybody in the house. And so in my crazy little mind, I'm like, all right, there's 4 people in the house. That means we can get this and this and this and this done, and then everything will be perfect, and then that's not a priority to them. Like, that's not even on their radar, and I'm like, whoa, 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 so why isn't the house shining and, like, perfectly done the way that I like it? Because I'm not in control, and that's not a priority for everybody else, and everybody kind of has their way of getting things done, and it's not fair for me to follow people around and be like, oh, whoa, 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 the towels have 3 folds. Like, just, okay, that's
no
better.
Yeah.
And no tags showing on the towels. Just little things like that.
I would say for me the hardest thing is communication. While we all get along really well, and I don't think I could ever, if find myself in a place where I couldn't come to them and say something, I find myself turning inward and thinking, oh, if this happened, maybe they're feeling this way, and I assume and I don't know, I feel like my communication shuts down, and that creates a division between all of us, even though nothing's ever been said.
I would say for me personally is probably being the most emotional person in the house. She's the most tidy, I'm the most emotional. So being emotionally raw with three people who are not is, for me, really difficult. So we've had a lot of communication about how to handle me. And for me to be able to do some good self-care, which is good because I learn to grow. I mean, now I'm turning it into a positive. That's one of my things. I'm sorry. But it still is really hard. To be in the emotional states that I am sometimes and not having like a wrapped up result to it, I end up kind of going and hiding and processing sometimes. So for me, that's the hardest thing.
Yeah, and anybody who knows me knows I'm fairly introverted. I'm not really that social guy, and so this is a very big social environment all the time. So especially with the kids running around, it's very difficult for me to find that rest that I require to recharge myself. So it's been very difficult to find that, especially with just the busyness of the house and busyness of things that have happened to the house itself, not necessarily the people, but the actual structure. So, but yeah, just finding rest and solitude for me is very difficult.
So hopefully as they're talking, you all are identifying like, oh my gosh, if I had to live in that situation, I am with you. Like that would be really, really difficult. Or that sounds like fun, right? Like to wake up in the morning and just have another person in the house, you know? You're like, oh, that's, I have someone to go talk to. Or you're like, that is my worst nightmare. Like that is my nightmare. So you guys have intentionally chosen into this. Like this isn't an accident. They have decided to do this. And there's things that, as we've kind of talked about, that you guys have learned about who God is. You've learned about who the people are that God's made in his image. I'd love for you to share like just a little bit about, and it's probably tied to some of those positives and negatives, but what are the things that you've learned about people, you've learned about like community, and you've learned about God?
All right, I'll go. I think that it kind of goes along with a little bit of what Jorma was saying about like knowing or figuring out different personalities, because it is challenging sometimes, like adapting yourself to better suit, because we all want to serve each other as well. Like while my personality is slightly different than Megan's, I'm not going to be like, well, you should probably stop being emotional about it and just suck it up. Like that's not going to help me. It's not going to help her. So like figuring out how to bless people and take care of people who might have a little bit different way of life than you. And then also the control aspect, like I have a little bit of control issues. And so I kind of think it's like God has shown me like, look it, like life still goes on. If you don't, like if you're not in complete control of everything. And I think that that also has helped me like give God control of a lot of things that I've been like, well, I'll just keep on, I'll hold on to this corner and then you can have the rest of it, but I'll just still hold on to this little part just in case something happens and I can just yank it back. So I think that that's like one of the biggest things that I have taken from the situation.
And so mine kind of echoes that as well, is understanding the patience of everybody else, or understanding what patience is and then being able to apply it to life. Because I mean, I too like things in a certain order, and I like to have things quiet often. And not having that, it's given me a perspective that I can look at other people and see what they have and what they need and understand them better. And not just these three other people with me, but I can understand everyone better than what I did before we moved in together. And in that understanding, I'm able to love them the way that they need to be loved.
That's a good point. I would feed off of that a little bit. I think along with having a better understanding of what love is and how to love others, I think grace is something I struggle with typically in my normal life. I'm pretty like, you've crossed this line, so I'm out. And you can't do that in a situation like this. You can't have that mindset of, well, I've been hurt, so I'm gonna fly away now, like cut you out. That cannot happen logistically unless I move, and that's not gonna happen either. but I think just understanding that if I think someone else has wronged me, imagine how God feels, right? Like that grace is so much bigger than forgiving someone's words, you know, so much bigger. So that's what it's done for me.
Yeah, I would tag on to that on the idea of grace, and we get this really beautiful image of grace. I feel like we get this little sliver of the grace that God has for us in the grace that we find for each other because of our commitment to each other. I mean, we are four very imperfect people with lots and lots of baggage, and we choose to continue to show up for each other every day. And see, I might cry because I'm the emotional one. Sorry. I'll try not to. And so in that, we learn this little bit about how much more much must God have grace for us when we, these very imperfect people who hurt each other's feelings and hurt each other often, we continue to show up for one another and have grace to be like, no, like I still choose you and I still choose to do life with you. And the only other time that I've experienced that is in marriage. And we still do that so imperfectly, but that image of grace and that little sliver of bringing heaven to earth, I feel like is something that we get to experience, not just because we live together, because you can have that kind of relationship with anyone you do community with. Mm-hmm. It's not like, oh, you have to do this or you won't get this little bit of grace. But just our experience and our walk has given us that little glimpse because of the way we've decided to do community. And so I feel like that's one of the things we've learned.
That's awesome, isn't it, guys? Here's what I'd love to do. I would love to. You can clap, too. That's great. I would love it, as we do with folks that come up and are willing and vulnerable enough to share their story. We want to pray for the Hensons and Hillmans. We want to pray for their home, their relationships going forward. And so if you feel comfortable, we invite you to extend a hand, and we're going to pray for them now. God, I thank you for Jorma and Megan, for Casey and Elvin. God, for Braden and for Madison and Bethany and for Hank. God, I thank you for their home. And God, God, they're sharing with us how they have tried to think intentionally about the way that they live, about the way they hold relationships, God, in a way that can honor you. God, in a way that they can become more fully the people, God, that you have created them to be. And God, I thank you that in hearing their stories, God, we can see for us the fruit that committed relationships can bring to bear and the challenges, the work that it takes. God, I pray that you would continue to bless them, God, that they would continue to have their greatest strengths and their greatest weaknesses come out. Be brought to bear, God, so that they can walk the journey of becoming more and more the people you created them to be. God, bless them, strengthen them, encourage them. And God, may the bonds of love that you create and you bring into our lives bind them ever closer together. It's in the name of Jesus that we pray. Amen. Amen. Would you guys thank the Hensons and Hillmans? All right, so... And I appreciate so much what Megan just shared. You don't have to go do this. We're not going to do moving into somebody else's home speed dating at the chili cook-off. Unless you want to, then by all means, go for it. You don't have to do this, but there's something about their situation. There's such an intentionality. There's such an... You can't avoid your stuff coming out when you live with other people. You just can't. And that's actually the nature of community. That's what separates community from friends, from relationships. Intentional community is that you keep on showing up day after day. You show up when things get hard. You show up when you don't want to. A lot of times we live our lives in such a way where we only show up when we want to, when we feel like it. And there's a way in relationships where God is calling us, not because God is cruel, not because God is a taskmaster, because God has really good things for us when we show up, even when we don't want to. And I go back to that image of a walnut tree. You get to pick your own tree, by the way. It doesn't have to be walnuts. But I go back to the image of a walnut tree where you're working. This didn't just happen. You're looking at the product of years and years of relationship with one another, vulnerability, tough conversations that they did not want to have with each other. There's a bunch of issues they would have rather swept under the rug, but they kept on showing up. And do you get a glimpse of what God can do when we show up in that way? Earlier, I said that you all this morning have overcome the siren song of sweatpants, remember? And really, that's a representation of the siren song of isolation. There's a real pain in isolation and being by yourself. Over time, it takes its toll on your soul. But it's safer. It's easier. It's cleaner. You get to triple fold the towels. You get to hide the tags in isolation. You don't get to do that in relationship. And the reason why we're talking about it is we want to be a church. We want to be a place where